Welcome to Cycling Fashion Week, the world's only podcast dedicated to cycling fashion, style, and aesthetics. We look at these things from a purely superficial point of view, but they are essential things as cyclists. I am your host, Alex. I am joined by my regular hosts, Warren and Tony. And Cycling Fashion Week is brought to you by our friends at Le Club. Go to leclub.cc. It is your go-to destination for this season's best premium cycling apparels. They've got brands like MAP, Fingers Crossed Socks, Quok Shoes, Alba Optics. They do worldwide shipping. And in fact, they just got some new brands into the shop. They got Universal Colors from the United Kingdom. Pretty cool collection of universal colors that they got over at leclub.cc. And they also announced last week that they were getting Sweet Protection helmets, including the beautiful Falconer model, which you can get in all white, which is my favorite. Go to leclub.cc, demand more from your cycling experience. And not to mention, they are the producers of the best coffee in the business, leclub.cc. Warren and Tony, how's it going this week?
It's going well, but I need the club to know, and I guess I could send them an email, but let's just talk a little bit more on the podcast. I just need some more coffee. I'm all out. It's the best stuff. I bought some stuff around Toronto that I like. It's fine, but I really could use another bag of Chameleon. So if our sponsor gods of the Le Club is listening, shoot me a bag.
Yeah, the coffee is named after Chameleon Wood. Toughest climb in the world. You need an espresso shot of Chameleon coffee to get to the top. Otherwise, it's impossible.
My friend who I started cycling with in Montreal, messaged, he listens to the podcast, big fan, of course. We're great. He messaged me and was like, someone's going to listen to the podcast and not do the research on Chameleon. And it's going to be some like old dentist guy with a Cervelo, like traveling to Montreal, thinking he's like going to climb the Stelvio.
It's tougher than the Stelvio.
It's harder than the Stelvio. So,
In fact, I can tell you there is snow on top right now.
What's your fastest time up Chameleon, Alex?
I think I'm sub 2 minutes. The guys on the world tour are about 3.5 minutes. I'm sub 2. No, seriously, I think my fastest time is 5 minutes and 45 seconds.
Almost 6 minutes. It's quite the climb.
It's extreme, but it's the mental difficulty of climbing it, though. When you're at the top, right, it becomes extremely difficult. Toughest climb in the world. Okay, a lot of things happening with the podcast. Just want to let our listeners know we've got a lot of big interviews coming up in the next few weeks. So do stay tuned to Cycling Fashion Week because we have some really cool interviews coming up. We're in the process of recording them right now. We will release in the next few episodes. Other thing, I am actually driving in person to Toronto, Ontario to meet with these two idiots this week. And the news there is that I got my hands on an old Cannondale Cad 5 with the Saeco colorway. So you'll recall early 2000s, Mario Cipollini, Saeco cycling team, the red and yellow paint job of those bikes. I actually found someone on the outskirts of Montreal that was selling an old Cad 5, which was in surprisingly good condition for not a ton of money, which in this crazy market that we've been in the last few years, it sounded incredible that people were just sleeping on this bike. It was a 54 centimeter frame, perfect for me. So I went and picked it up. And what I'm doing is I'm going to use it as my bike for when I go ride with these two guys, hopefully, and not the community as well, but just Warren and Tony. This is the bike I'm going to be using. So you may see it on our Instagram at Cycling Fashion Week. So I'm going to go there this week. There's going to be a movement on the Cannondale front and interviews in the next few weeks on Cycling Fashion Week.
I'm super excited for the Cannondale because you'll be here and then we will organize a secret community group ride where we'll all be family together and we'll ride together and we'll all wear matching kit. And we'll take lots of pictures for Instagram and it'll be like really what cycling was based on, which is family.
And a lot of people will add you to Strava afterward, Alex.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to ride like Tony, which is no Strava, no bike computer. And we're just going to ask Warren how many kilometers we're at, what speed we're going at.
I have to say, I'm actually kind of upset by my decision because the last couple of years I've had some bad injuries, which is kept me away from really riding, especially training in the winter, because I just couldn't do it. And this year I kind of like focused. I was on the Great Wahoo System program, getting fit. And so I was on just doing some laps the other day, and it just like felt really fast. And in my head, I was like, fuck, I wish I knew how fast I went. Like, and I know that average speed doesn't matter, and that, you know, it's all the stuff with power, but just like, it felt like these really like strong, heavy laps. There was like a strong headwind on one side, a tailwind that kind of relaxed on the other. And it felt like I put a lot of energy out. And in my head, I was like, man, I wonder how fast that was. And I have no idea. To be honest, I could have barely been riding for all I know.
It's almost as if the information collected by your cycling computer is like useful or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but then I can't gloat and be better than other people and be an elitist. So
I think it's the trend of 2022, riding without a computer. I saw our good friend Prempton, at Prempton on Instagram. We interviewed him on the podcast. He was riding the other day, no computer, no Strava. I feel like we're starting a trend here on Cycling Passion Week. Okay, our first segment, we look at news, new releases, things that just came out, industry news from the world of cycling fashion, and we're going to do a quick roundup of things that are new in the world of cycling fashion or that are new to us. The first item that we're going to talk about, this is perfect Cycling Fashion Week material because it's gravel and it's ASOS Man. Two things that we are especially fond, I wouldn't say we're fond of, but we're definitely fond of commenting on them. So ASOS launched a gravel collection. ASOS, the Swiss brand, known for very high quality garments, pretty well respected brand, but historically they've had a pretty ridiculous model, you know, marketing their stuff. His name is ASOS Guy. He has, you know, he's very, very ripped, very jacked gentleman, never wears a shirt. Anyhow, ASOS, the, you know, pretty respected brand, they launched a gravel collection. So this is also an interesting one because it's a brand that has very strong road credentials. They're veering into gravel like anybody else. And if you look at the gravel collection, it seems the clothing is a little looser. It's not as tight fitting. And they've got cargo shorts. And that's what's interesting is they're not even cargo bibs. They're cargo shorts. You know, the socks, there's nothing really special about them. I'm not sure why they're gravel socks. But it's, yeah, I guess if I were to describe it, they've got sort of slightly looser fitting clothing. And if you look at the mannequins that they used to display the clothing, they're not actually, it's not actually displayed on actual models. It's displayed on mannequins. Mannequins look a little frumpy, which I'm not, they look a little fat. Well, not fat, but they don't look as ripped as ASOS Man, for example. So it's a bit of a departure from the typical ASOS aesthetic here. So guys, what do we think about the ASOS gravel collection?
There's been a saying going around, I feel like the last couple of years, that like cycling is the new golf, in that all these like rich older guys are like getting into cycling, and that's where like business deals are made on cycling rides instead of on the golf course. And this collection to me is that, mostly because the jerseys look like golf shirts as jerseys to me.
They really do.
Yeah, that's what this looks like to me. It looks like if you really like golf, you'll probably really like this. But if you like cycling, you'll hate it.
Like if Trump goes on a ride at Mar-a-Lago, he's definitely wearing the ASOS gravel collection.
I thought the exact same thing when I first clicked on, because like on the ASOS website, the photo is just the sort of product shot. And so I thought, oh, these are just like golf shirts. And then when I clicked on it, and then you get to see it on the still quite slender, but yes, less ripped new ASOS Man. And actually on the fitting, you guys are going to hate me, but I kind of like it. Like, I mean, and this is, I'm just saying the jersey, I like the color. I mean, I sort of don't get the quarter zip. I guess like mostly when I've done gravel, it's been in like quite hot weather and I want to be able to like unzip, but I don't mind the color. And actually like when it's on the body, I feel like it actually kind of has a bit of a, like a vintage style feel. Now, before I go too positive on ASOS, I'm going to say that I do not get the cargo shorts. Not because of cargo, obviously. We hate cargo.
Why would you want shorts instead of bibs?
But that's what I'm saying. Like when I first started cycling, I bought a pair of mech cycling shorts, non-bibs. I didn't really understand the concept of bibs. I think they were either cheaper or I thought bibs were too extreme or whatever. And then once you put on bibs and you realize like the discomfort and the way it, the restriction it does and the chafing and all that stuff, like, I don't know, I'm sure, you know, ASOS is known as a really like technical company and they probably say they've got the special waistband that doesn't move around as much or something, but like the bib is a tried and true method of kind of being a more comfortable, practical cycling lower body wear.
So that both that and the quarter zip or whatever, I actually think those are sort of decisions based on the fact that the gravel trend seems to be going like really casual, and it's away from the, what we always talk about, which is you should wear road kit when you're riding gravel or mountain biking, whatever. And I think the reason it's only the three-quarter zip is that you could, like, you know, walk into a craft brewery halfway through your gravel ride and get a pint and wear what almost looks like just a shirt. Or maybe you're going to go to, you know, play the back nine after your gravel ride because you also like golf. But that's the shorts make less sense to me. But yeah, the cargo shorts to me, they look longer. Like it almost, it's veering almost into like mountain bike territories, like baggies or something. And I mean, one of the items in this collection is trail liner bib shorts, which are meant to go under baggies. So maybe ASOS is, I can't be bothered to look on their website if they sell mountain bike stuff.
The trail liner shorts that they have, they look so incredibly uncomfortable too. They seem like they're very low rise. I just can't see myself riding in shorts like that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's because they're supposed to fit under baggies and not really look like you're wearing shorts, I think.
See, it's just a different culture. I can't do that.
I think Warren has a business idea there that we could get into. Right. I mean, especially if you're talking about hybrid sports, so you know, golf courses have a lot of space and 18 holes is a lot of work. Right. But we could split that off. It's a nine hole. One side's a nine hole course and the other side is sort of a gravel cyclocross track. And so new version of the businessman can get there and he can rip around with their buddies on the gravel track for a couple hours. And then in their ASOS gravel kit, they can head right to the back nine and shoot a few. And I mean, I'm sure someone will develop a golf club bar bag to just, you know, find a way to load golf clubs onto putting bags on every inch of your bike. Why not a golf club bag? So I think we've got a bit of a business idea out there. So if anybody's listening with a little bit of investment money, I think we've proven, you know, through this podcast that we've got a great idea and great reach. So
yeah. And then the clubhouse would also have a craft brewery in it. you gotta crush some IPAs
slow drip coffee.
Well, but then that's not the golf, right? Because the golf is all about the crispy boys. So I mean, maybe we partner with Coors, we partner with Miller to develop a kind of like crispy craft.
Coors is a craft brewery, no?
Okay, all right, moving on to our second news item of the week. So how am I going to introduce this? We talked about in recent episodes, I think it must have been about 2 months ago, I would say, we talked about a release that La Passione had done with former classics legend Tom Bonin, four-time Paris-Roubaix winner Tom Bonin. He needs no introduction. He did a collaboration with La Passione. I think it was called the Bonenberg at the time. It was pretty nondescript. There wasn't much about it. But anyhow, it was sort of Tom Bonin's first foray into the world of cycling fashion, because I've never actually thought of him as an icon or as someone that people would look up to, not for his cycling ability, but for his style and his overall fashion aesthetics. Well, this trend seems to be continuing because Tom Bonin is now launching a line of sunglasses, basically called sustainable 3D printed sunglasses. So Materialize, which is Europe's largest 3D printing company, collaborated with Belgian eyewear brand Odette Lunette and Tom Bonin, who's actually 41 years old now, and they created basically what they deem to be the world's first sustainable 3D printed range of athleisure glasses. So important to note, they're not cycling glasses per se, they are athleisure glasses. So, you know, kind of Tom Bonin sort of hopping on another trend here. You know, according to the company that makes them, Materialize, you know, these are more sustainable because traditional methods of making glasses use the subtractive milling method, which wastes up to 70% of the original material, which goes to landfill. And they say that with this new method of making glasses, it's more sustainable, less stuff goes in landfill. So yeah, Tom Bonin getting into the sunglasses game after the La Passione collaboration. So guys, what do you think about that?
I just wanted to acknowledge that. I mean, I don't know if it's an intentional choice or maybe it's just how he dresses normally, but in the promo photo he posted on his Instagram account, he looks like a Coke dealer. And I don't know if that's like a throwback to his like coke habit?
His drinking habit, Warren. I told the story the last time. For those who didn't hear last time, he won Paris-Roubaix and he got tested positive for cocaine. And then his excuse was that he had a drinking problem, which led him to use cocaine. So it's not a cocaine problem. It's a drinking problem.
Sorry. He has a white t-shirt and white jeans, a bald head, much like myself, actually. So maybe I've got a little Tom Bonin in me. But, and then he's like posing with this woman in like a one piece unitard. Is she, who's she? She seems to be an influencer.
I assume just a model.
Well, she's got 176,000 followers on Instagram, so she's probably somebody. But yeah, she also looks like she was, you know, an after-hours club or whatever. And then the sunglasses themselves kind of just look like Persil's from afar. I don't know. Like, Alex talked a lot about the, like, 3D printed stuff and how it's environmental friendly. I don't really care about that stuff. From afar, they just look like a pair of Persil's to me, and I'd much rather look like Steve McQueen than Tom Bonin in this coke fiend photo.
I mean, I just love Todd.
Not bad, is what I'm saying. It's just
no, like, but it's, you know, like, I just love talking to Tom Bonin, and he's such a legend, and all his, you know, just ridiculousness. But like, in terms of like an impact on cycling product, and I guess that sort of periphery is, this is the cycling, we talk about it, but it's not particularly interesting. I wouldn't wear them. It seems like something gravel people would wear, because like, that's like athleisure. When you say that, the word gravel comes to my mind. Like, it's really an athleisure sport. Like, it's not really athletics. It's like kind of leisure. And gravel people definitely love sustainability. So actually, this is a good gravel sunglass. So I recommend to those gravel riders out there.
I don't have much to say about the glasses, but my only issue is, I think we need to stop making Tom Bonin the style icon happen. We need to stop. The cycling industry is really trying to ram Tom Bonin is a cycling fashion icon down our throats. And that's just not true. He's a great cyclist. He's, you know, seems to have had a lot of fun outside of cycling, and that's all good. I'm in favor of that, but he is not a style icon. He's not Mario Cipollini. He, you know, this is not happening.
No, if you rolled up to a group ride wearing that La Passion Bunenberg stuff and these sunglasses, you'd be like, oh, I'm not on that wheel. That person's going to be a sketchy wheel.
People would know that that person doesn't listen to Cycling Fashion Week, which is
another reason to be a sketchy wheel. Question is, who in the last, let's include current riders, but say in the last 15 years of the Peloton would be a style icon?
So I would say definitely Bradley Wiggins. We can debate whether his style has aged well. My answer would be no. Arguably, on the Eurosport broadcast, some of the outfits that he's wearing right now are a little bit ridiculous. He should dress his age a little more, but arguably his mod style when he was a pro rider was pretty iconic. And I would say that Bradley Wiggins was a style icon. I would say, again, Mario Cipollini, no question, was a style icon. I'm trying to think who else. What about David Miller?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of style, and he started Chapter 3, right? And he's, but he's like obviously there's Adam Blythe, our good friend Adam Blythe. Adam Blythe is sort of, you know, was known as the style guy, did the white bibs when he was the national champion and on Aqua Blue and stuff. But like, they're so kind of, no offense, our good friend Adam Blythe, but they're so small time that like, we're the legends, you know, the legends of the sport being sort of these style icons.
You know who else I think was a style icon, but unfortunately veering a little bit in that gravel style? I would say Taylor Finney probably was a style icon cool. In his own respect, like in that kind of hippie American style.
I would say Taylor Finney for sure. I mean, actually, great our good friends over at Thereabouts podcast just had an interview with him, and it's really good. He let a few truth bombs about
and the he said and yeah he said doping is still we're in the doping golden age right now. It's still rampant.
He called out Cycling Tips for their clickbait article title about that interview because he felt they misrepresented what he said and made it all about the doping when it was actually quite a wide-ranging conversation. So Taylor Finney, good friend Taylor Finney, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the podcast to talk about
it's style. It's actually two of our good friends going at it, Cycling Tips and Taylor Finney.
We'll shit on our good friend Cycling Tips with you.
So yeah, so style icons, Bradley Wiggins, Taylor Finney, Mario Cipollini, David Millar, I think that, and Adam Blythe. I think I'd say these were the cycling fashion icons.
I don't think this is quite right, but I think there's a case to be made. Vanderpool has some style because he's worn the white bibs. Off the bike, very questionable, but on the bike, I think he's the white bibs.
I mean, we did forget about Woot in the frosted tips in the sandstorm.
Yeah,
that's true.
Woot van Aert frosted tips. He's a Euro style icon, arguably. I think there's a very aggressively Euro element to this that I would say, but he's still very young though. It's still very early to declare him a style icon.
If I still had hair, I would definitely have frosted tips.
Okay, moving on to the next segment, which is the Panache Police. The Panache Police is the segment where we just have pretty random rants about things that we see on the road in cycling fashion, or more generally as phenomenons in the cycling fashion world. This week, we are going to talk about a very interesting phenomenon that we've actually noticed in the last couple of weeks as a result of a brand that we obviously follow what they do very closely, Panama Studios. We talk about it a lot. They're one of the top brands at the moment. They happen to have had their brand summit in Mallorca recently. I think in the last 2-3 weeks, it was in Mallorca on the Balearic Islands in Spain in the Mediterranean. And essentially what they did was they had a bunch of Panama Studio dealers. They had designers of the brand, they had brand management, but they also had influencers, Instagram influencers, and brand ambassadors kind of all get together in Mallorca, ride together, all wear their kit, post content, and I'm sure kind of strategize about what they're doing to represent the brand. So I thought it was pretty interesting that brands are doing stuff like that, to have a brand summit where they gather dealers, influencers, etc. And it kind of got us thinking about, you know, does it make sense to do that? And what do we think about that in general? So guys, I'll open it up to you.
I assume they're like doing some photo shoots and that kind of thing with like some of the ambassadors and maybe the dealers. They're talking, you know, showing upcoming designs or that kind of thing. Because, you know, we obviously, the three of us, all follow Panoramal, a number of Panoramal ambassadors and dealers. Because, you know, we've had Bruno, who's a dealer Panoramal, on the podcast. We've had Virginie, who's an ambassador, on the podcast. So we obviously saw a lot of content coming out of that. But if you only followed the brand, you might not have really seen quite as much. And so I assume they got to be doing some content creation. For me, I was just like, I get why, like having dealer conferences, and I get incorporating cycling. You're all cyclists. You want to go for rides. But the brand ambassadors, you know, and this is not specific to Panoramal. I just wonder, like, is Panoramal like paying for their flights out there? Like, and if so, man, like, how much value are brand ambassadors bringing to brands like Panoramal? I'm genuinely curious. Like, I'm not necessarily criticized, because like that seems like quite a large investment in marketing to be flying them out to these summits in Mallorca and just going on these rides, maybe paying for their hotel, and, you know, and then also giving them free kit. And, you know, some of these ambassadors just have a couple thousand of followers and post some photos. I don't know. To me, I mean, hopefully Le Club isn't listening to this and they start thinking about what good investment means in marketing. But, you know, I was just wondering, it just seems like a really big investment that they seem to do in non-COVID times pretty frequently. So I don't know. I, if anything, it just makes me curious what the point of it is.
So I sort of thought that too a lot when I see, you know, I'm active on Instagram and I see these, you know, the ambassadors and their posting and you know, kind of what they get. And then obviously with this brand summit, you know, it's one thing to bring the dealers in and maybe you're trying to, you know, push them for a larger order next time. But when it's kind of these, you know, just the sort of influencers and ambassadors, what are they getting out of it? Because you're right, it does sort of seem like you're getting a lot out of it. And I wonder how much how much the marketing works in the long term. And then also, I have a couple kind of thoughts and questions for you guys. One is it a bad idea to kind of focus on this? You know, we're elitists, let's not get it wrong here, but like a lot of the way this kind of influencer stuff has, and because they're like very carefully curating their sort of cycling lifestyle, is there a point where like people will want to be into it because they think it's cool? And then always that style thing flips to the other side where it seems pretentious and annoying. And like putting so much eggs in your kind of advertising basket for Panoramal, not just Panoramal, but like in this case, we're talking about it to be about like the coolest of the cool kids, I feel like might backfire. And then secondly, we're all super you know, obsessed with cycling fashion, and we talk about all these brands, and we're, you know, we're always looking at stuff. Is the free stuff worth it if you could only wear one brand? Because I'm going to say for me, no. I like the idea. I see lots of different companies. I have, you know, that, man, I really like to wear that, or that's really cool, or whatever. And I, as much as I'm a shill for free gear, if I had to wear only that, I don't think I could do it.
Tony, to your points, one, I agree with you. I think there is the possibility that somebody who, say, maybe buys a lot of Pat Normal, sees all this content from ambassadors, and it looks like this idyllic cycling trip, like, very jealous, I, you know, that they did not invite us. You know, it's a possibility of a customer, and it's like, is this what I'm paying for when I pay this, like, high price point of Pat Normal's?
Of course it is. Of course it is.
No, I know, but you know what I mean? So I think there is a risk of somebody seeing that and being a bit put off. Like, I don't own any Pat Normal. I think I've made my kind of personal feelings on the brand relatively clear. But like, if I did see that, it would put me off a bit. To your point, Tony, is the free kit worth it? You only have to wear a brand? I don't think so. One of the reasons I got so invested in cycling fashion, why we started this podcast, is there's so many different brands out there making nice stuff, making cool stuff. And I like to buy a lot of it, try a lot of it, or maybe get sent free stuff by a lot of the companies. You can do that too.
So Tony raised an interesting question. You know, this thing that we see a lot on social media, this carefully curated cycling lifestyle that people are choosing to represent on their social media, is this sort of what people expect when, after they see things like the Brand Summit and then they see the content that comes out of it? I think so, yes. I think arguably one of the reasons why cycling has boomed so much in the last few years has been because of the proliferation of cycling kit that is stylish, that is desirable, that people want to be a part of, and the lifestyle that is around it and the photos that people take. And I think it's actually very smart on the part of brands like Pat Normal to be creating these events with their ambassadors so that the ambassadors can create content. And they're in fact growing their market by doing that, because they're drawing people to the sport and they're drawing people to consuming their products as a result of that. So I think what Tony said about having a carefully curated sort of cycling lifestyle, which is totally not real, let's be honest, still, I think this is very aspirational, and I think it's drawing people to the sport and to expensive brands like Pat Normal. Summit looked incredible. I mean, riding in Mallorca, I'm in. If Pat Normal wants to bring me next time, I'm going. In fact, I think the main mistake that Pat Normal did was not inviting us, because we would have driven so much value for the brand as the global style authority on cycling. So next time you do something in Mallorca, preferably in Italy, if you could do it in Italy, that would be better.
So yeah, I mean, I completely agree. Well, you know, we'll go, obviously somewhere in Italy would be better, but I'm not going to hate Spain. But I think, kind of, you know, to your point about the curated sort of aspirational lifestyle, I mean, that's a huge part of social media influencers. And that's why there's, you know, you can talk about the good or the bad of it and stuff like that. But I actually would like, I always say, oh, you know, I generally like someone sort of like working with Pat Normal who maybe listens or has a connection with it. Because in the Toronto scene, Pat Normal doesn't seem to have a lot in terms of the, like, I'm sorry, Alex, the greater community of it, right? It does seem like a very sort of elitist sort of niche thing. Like, and I'm curious, are they in sort of the grand, you know, in Denmark and places that they have maybe more of a foothold, like, are they doing more sort of like community cycling stuff, or is it just, are you sort of our beautiful fit coffee making, you know, ambassador, and we'll post you and everyone else can go fuck off? And I'm not against that per se, but I don't know if that could backfire. I just want to know what Pat Normal are sort of doing more for like the greater cycling community. What do their group rides look like? Because as far as I know, in Toronto, their group rides are very closed off. It's kind of an invite only thing. It's not really for everyone to kind of come. Is that their method in the way they just always do it? Because I, you know.
Some brands built empires by shunning the community and being exclusive. Try walking into an authorized dealer to buy a Rolex watch right now. They'll just laugh at you. They'll say, well, we just don't have any right now. You can join our wait list, which is 10 years long. But
at some level, P&S needs volume sales to make a business. They're not that premium.
For sure. But there is an exclusivity to it. And maybe that's what they're cultivating.
That's true. And maybe you look at kind of the opposite, which is maybe the RAFA, the RCC, you know, like the RAFA Cycling Club, which granted you have to pay to be a member of, but they've got the clubhouses. They do group rides, which to my understanding are open to anyone. So to Tony's point, I don't know what Pat Normal's goal is like, you know, they call themselves this international cycling club. At least from my experience, the rides in Toronto, the impression I get is you can only show up to it wearing Pat Armel. I've certainly never been invited on one, and not to say like I'm some big shot in the Toronto cycling scene, but I know a lot of people in the scene and, you know most of the group rides that happens. And I don't know, it's just, maybe that is what they're going for, but like, I think especially with the way cycling's going with embracing community is probably not quite the right way to go. But
I think I had a bit of a long-winded way of basically saying, like, if we take this purely from a marketing standpoint, I don't think that the elitism, if it's too extreme, will work. I think there's like one thing to make like a slightly aspirational, you know, you want to be cool here. But if you're this kind of thing where cycling is a lot about the group rides, and, you know, Alex Ostroy mentioned in Prospect Park in New York, they do kind of pickup biking, which I liked, right? And this kind of community that Alex hates or whatever, or some level. But if there's like this like fine line of elitism between like, we're really cool, but hey, you could be cool with us, and we're really cool, fuck off, don't talk to us. And I think at first the fuck off, don't talk to us like works for a little bit, and then people just get really annoyed with it. I mean, we're kind of hard on Pat Armel. I do think they make beautiful kit. I like looking at their pictures on Instagram. I don't want to like get too negative on them, but like, I haven't seen much in the way of kind of like, at least in Toronto, like what they're doing for the greater Toronto cycling community beyond people who own Pat Armel.
I don't think what you're saying is exclusive to Pat Armel by any means.
No.
And yeah, we might be unfairly singling them out a bit right now, but I think you're right. I think it's a very fine line with the elitism. And I even like, I was going to pose the question to you guys, where are we in the spectrum of elitism with this podcast? Are we at the point where people are going to be like, oh, fuck off? Or are we at the point where people, people
in? We, as one of our reviewers said, we straddle the fine line between elitism and satire and self-deprecation. Pat Armel, I think, is more on the elitism side.
We're also, the thing is, we're also like, actually what we're doing is like welcoming people with open arms in this way of like we talk about our like kind of like forays into cycling. And we mentioned, like, we get it. Everyone starts at a weird spot of like maybe a bit of discomfort around Lycra and spandex and the tightness of it all and bib shorts, and start with some hand-me-downs and some, you know, Perlazume mech brand. Actually, Perlazume is like some nice stuff. I shouldn't say that. But, you know, Segoy or whatever. And then it's like, we're kind of there, like with our arms open saying like, you've got that starting base and you've fallen in love with cycling. I know you need some guidance because you want to get to the next level. Come to us, listen to us. We're going to help guide you. You know, we're here for you. We respond to every message. We're going to talk to you. We're going to listen. So I think we're elitist, but elitist with a kind heart.
We're the big brothers of cycling fashion. Yeah. We guide people through this, but we don't judge anyone. We all started somewhere. And like Tony said, we own some specs out. Okay, next segment in the canal, where we throw something that we dislike from the world of cycling or cycling fashion in Montreal's Lachine Canal. Tony, why don't you start?
So we came up a little while ago where we have canal, which is the bad stuff we throw into the Montreal Lachine Canal, and then the opposite side is the Chamelien, which I don't know if we throw anything into it. We go up it. This is the world's hardest coal. So it's kind of like, that's the positive. That's a good thing we want to shout out. And so I kind of have like a split one because they go together. So my canal is, I mean, I don't want to call them fingerless cycling gloves. I think just like, to me, always that's what cycling gloves meant, where they were the fingerless version. I know sort of full finger gloves become popular, but so cycling gloves, I hate them. I think they look stupid. I just can't stand them. I know that I'm going to get a DM from someone saying, you know, oh, have fun picking the gravel out of your palms after a crash. And I will have fun doing that because I will look better riding the bike than wearing those awful things. And then my Chamelien is because I noticed that the great Mathieu van der Poel won on the weekend wearing no gloves at all. That's badass. There's cobbles. There's all that kind of stuff. And he just was tough as nails. Didn't have gloves. That's probably why Pogacar lost, was because van der Poel went no gloves.
Do you ride no gloves in March?
No, but that's a warmth thing. Like, I'm talking about like the, you know, summer.
You're talking about the summer. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I was riding the other day, no gloves. Like, once it gets above 10, I got no gloves on.
And if you do like hard gravel, no offense, God forbid you do gravel, but if, let's say you do a gravel ride, you with like really, you know, big descents that are really like lots of vibration, you wouldn't wear any gloves?
You guys know this. I had a bad injury a couple of years ago to my left arm. And so I actually was wearing full finger gloves for a while, purely because I was having grip issues. Just I hadn't built the strength back in my arm. And that's kind of the only time I have rode gravel was the last couple of years. So the answer would sort of be yes, because I've done it, but I just really don't like gloves.
Similarly, on that note, I've actually broken both of my thumbs in two separate biking accidents. And the first time when I was allowed back on the bike, I actually, because my grip strength wasn't great, but also the base of my thumb, so the palm of my hand, was really still recovering, I actually got a pair of cycling gloves with a bit of padding on them. And I think I tried wearing them for 5 kilometers on one ride and then was just like, this is terrible. Not only because they looked bad, I agree with you, Tony, but I actually found the bit of padding made the handlebar feel worse. And I don't think it did anything for the pain in my hands. So my fingers occasionally go a little numb because of the pins in my hands from my surgeries. And I just shake out my hand and then I'm good to go. I don't know. I've done some rough gravel rides on my road bike. And
it's an interesting debate, gloves or no gloves. I'd be curious to see what our listeners say. If you guys want to send us DMs at Cycling Fashion Week or send us emails, cyclingfashionweek@gmail.com. Love to hear what you guys think, because I don't know if I can make up my mind on this, because it's true that, yeah, no gloves probably looks better, probably looks cleaner, but you also have some great riders like Julien Alaphilippe wearing gloves pretty much all the time. It is the classic look in cycling. If you're talking about a vintage classic look, it is with the gloves with no fingers. So it's a difficult one.
I mean, I was sort of, when I started cycling, it was sort of proposed. I think I did wear them when I started it. I was kind of, I didn't have experts like us to guide me. So I was just sort of following the, guy at the shop in Montreal. And I was sort of sold to me that it was about crashing, right? People have a tendency to throw their hands down when they crash in anything, any type of fall. It's kind of a natural reaction. And so, you're going along kind of shitty asphalt or something, and then, you slide on your hands. And if you've got these gloves, you're protecting your cuts and scrapes and that kind of stuff. So it was kind of sold to me less like on bike comfort, more of a preventative thing. But I just never I wore them and they were kind of thing. And I just never got into the look. I just looked terrible. And then I saw at the race on the weekend, just Mathieu Van Der Poel not wearing them, and then Pogacar, and it just I know Mathieu Van Der Poel just looks so much cooler. I was just this guy looks way fucking better.
I associate wearing gloves with amateur crit racing. Cause I know crit racers are really big into gloves to save yourself from road rash for when you inevitably crash in a crit, cause it'll happen. And so that's why it's I don't know, if somebody rolls up a group ride wearing fingerless gloves, I'm oh shit, are they expecting to crash? I don't know.
Big debate. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I just think the other side of that take is probably not as bad as you make it out to be. I think, historically people have worn gloves and I don't think it looks terrible. So I'd be curious to see what our listeners have to say. Okay, next item in the canal, I'm going to go ahead. So what's in the canal for me this week is the fact that stuff in the bike parts world is still back ordered in 2022 from COVID-19. That when you go to a bike shop, so I went to a local bike shop here in Montreal, but you still have to make an appointment that's probably 2 weeks from now. And honestly, pre-COVID, I don't remember ever having to make an appointment to go into a bike shop for mechanical maintenance, for service, stuff like that. I would just show up and they'd be like, hi, how are you doing? Sure, we'll take your bike in, probably work on it tomorrow, come back, pick it up. And with the combination of the demand in the increase in demand for cycling products, cycling parts, cycling bike maintenance, so mechanical services, basically demand has exploded, supply has gone down due to the lack of parts, due to social distancing requirements as well in bike shops and in the mechanical workshop and atelier. So generally speaking, demand's gone up, supply's gone down. Result is you've had to make crazy appointments online that happen only in about a month from now. And it's just, I understand from the shop's perspective, that's how they have to operate. They can't, supply all the demand that's out there. It's not their fault. I get it. I'm just very upset at the situation that with COVID-19, two years on, we still have to do this and parts are still not available. I asked them, you know, this new Cannondale, that, well, this new Cannondale, it's quite old actually, but this Cannondale was interested in maybe changing the group set on it. And I said, you know, if I want to get like a 105 group set, can I get that? And they basically laughed at me. They said, no, we're just getting nothing right now from Shimano. China has another wave of COVID right now. They're locking down Shanghai. So this thing's not over. It's going to be a good time until the supply chain of bike parts gets back to normal. And that's what's in the canal this week. That situation overall is in the canal. Warren, what do you got in the canal this week?
Before I throw something in the canal, I just want to quickly, last episode, I threw hashtag outside is free into the canal, and it was a listener suggestion and I forgot their name. So I just wanted to give credit to Ben DGF on Instagram for setting that idea to us. It was a great idea and it very much belongs in the canal. I think what I'm going to throw into the canal this week is a spring group ride formation. And what I mean by that is the first couple of group rides, when you're back out on the road, it's maybe not like an official club sanctioned ride. It's just like, you know, six or eight friends getting together. You've all been on your
members of the community,
members of the community. You know, so nobody Alex would ever speak to or look at, you know, you just go for, I don't know, 80, 100K. You're kind of just like getting back used to road riding. And I just find, I don't know, maybe this is an opportunity for our listeners to just wonder who we ride with, but everyone's just a little rusty, you know, and everything's just kind of a bit casual, including like riding two up or maybe letting that wheel in front of you get a little too far ahead, that kind of thing. And we're better than that. We're all better than that. You know, we've all learned how to group ride and like learned how to ride safely with the community. And, you know,
Warren, I'm not better than that. I had the exact, like, I literally, when I first got on my bike, this is the first year I spent like some serious time on the trainer in the winter, really focused on it. And I guess like you're on it, it's so hard, you know, your bike's stationary. So you kind of like all the kind of things with your body, you can kind of slump down a bit, pay attention. I got out for some like laps. I think you were there. And in my head, I was like, I got to leave. So I'm going to kill somebody or crash away. Cause my first ride out should have been alone because I just like, my body was still in this weird, like, in this weird like trainer method where I forgot that the bike moves on its own. Like, not on its own, but I agree it should be in the canal. Like, I'm not saying it shouldn't be in the canal, but I'm a culprit of that. I had a terrible first couple rides outside. Like it was hard to remember how to ride a bike.
I'm guilty of that too. That's partly why I'm throwing in the canals. I don't know. It comes back pretty quick, but.
What was your first outdoor ride this year? Was it just laps in the, around the CNE?
Laps of CNE.
Do you guys know what my first outdoor ride was? It's very uncharacteristic.
Chameleon.
No, it was a gravel ride.
Oh,
it was a gravel ride in like kind of muddy, you know, kind of snowy, kind of muddy roads, but on a beautiful day. I was in the country and that's what I did. I took my cyclocross bike and I went for a gravel ride. So just so that people know, even Cycling Fashion Week hosts get on those gravel roads.
And you used SRAM the whole time.
And my SRAM was working fine too. I couldn't believe, like, it was the drivetrain is extremely dirty because I didn't actually wash it on my last fall ride. I just put it in the barn in the country. And then, yeah, I have a barn. So that's where I leave my, it tells you the kind of respect I have for SRAM. But I left it in the barn for the winter, still very dirty drivetrain, picked it up. And it never shifted better than that SRAM Force 10-speed 2x.
I think we're going to have Ted King on the podcast to rate your barn, because that's something he does on Instagram, is he rates barns.
Oh, really? Well, he lives in Vermont, right? So yeah, he's actually not too far from where I am in the country. So Ted King, our good friend Ted King, if you're listening, hit me up and we're going to go on a ride in the Rasputitsa from Vermont and Eastern Townships. Okay, that's it for another episode of Cycling Fashion Week. Thank you, Warren. Thank you, Tony. Thank you to all our listeners. Hit us up, cyclingfashionweek@gmail.com. Send us your bikes to review. And thank you to our friends and our sponsors over at Le Club, leclub.cc, your one-stop shop, your go-to destination for the hottest cycling gear and apparel that you can find right now. They've got the best brands. They've got MAP. They've got Fingers Crossed. They've got Quark, Alba Optics. And as I mentioned earlier, they just launched Universal Colors and Sweet Protection helmets. Demand more from your cycling experience. They ship worldwide. They have the best coffee. Go to leclub.cc and you can get it there. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with more Cycling Fashion Week, and we've got some big interviews coming up in the next few weeks. So make sure to get our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google. Thank you, and see you in a few weeks.